Melbourne Writers Festival acknowledges the peoples of the Kulin Nation, the traditional owners of the land on which this event was recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Hello, I'm Michaela Maguire, Artistic Director of Melbourne Writers Festival. You're listening to a conversation recorded live at our 2023 festival. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please consider making a donation to Melbourne Writers Festival. As a not-for-profit organisation, inspiring, thoughtful and challenging discussions like the one you are about to listen to are only made possible thanks to the generous support of people like you. Learn how you can be part of our community at mwf.com.au/support. I hope you enjoy this episode. This event was supported through the Melbourne City Revitalisation Fund, a $200 million partnership of the Victorian Government and the City of Melbourne.
Psychological distance, I wrote in The Believer, is a way of measuring the cognitive separation between ourselves and other people, events, or times. It is the felt experience that something or someone is close to or far away from us here and now. There is not a direct relationship between psychological distance and objective distance. Something far away in space or time can feel closer than something right beside us, and vice versa. Psychological distance is our superpower and our Achilles heel, a way of flying or falling. Perhaps as readers, we always already knew this, felt that we could be in a certain crowded room and still feel utterly alone, or that we could be apart in time or space, but still connected. Psychoanalysts and social psychologists have been telling us about that for nearly 100 years. The great British pediatrician and psychoanalyst Donald Winnicott referred to it as our three lives. First, our life in the interpersonal and natural world. Second, our interior life of psychic reality. And third, our creative life, which unfurls in the terrain of cultural inheritance, art, myth, philosophy, religion. I think it cannot be placed in the inner or personal psychical reality, Winnicott explained in 1967, because it is not a dream. It is a part of a shared reality. When we gather here tonight in this way for this purpose, we are living all three of those lives. The German psychoanalyst Erich Fromm wrote in 1941 about the need to be related to the world outside oneself, the need to avoid aloneness. Fromm explained that this relatedness to others is not identical with physical contact. An individual may be alone, he wrote, alone in the physical sense, for many years, and yet he may be related to ideas, values, or at least social patterns that give him a feeling of communion and belonging. In Fromm's conception, physical aloneness becomes unbearable only if it also implies moral aloneness. There is a place where one is never morally alone. The writer Helene Cixous described it as a fantastical nation, which is that of literature. Tonight we're talking about this year's theme. I've been away for a while. How do we measure awayness or apartness? Before our common time was bisected by COVID, I would have asked what standard measures exist for the subjective experience of time and space. Now, however, when we say I've been away for a while, the meaning is perhaps more universally understood. There are such things as national or social crises of such an order that they test all those who live through them, John Berger wrote in his incandescent 1967 study of a country doctor, a fortunate man. They are moments of truth in which not everything but a great deal is revealed about individuals, classes, institutions, and leaders, he continued. Even those who, as a result of the crisis, find themselves in total and lasting opposition to one another will nevertheless agree that what was revealed in the moment of truth was undeniable. In a crisis that reveals and tests in the way I am suggesting, every man has to choose for himself. By choosing for himself, he is then unequivocally committed with all the others who have chosen likewise. It is as though at a given moment, each individual were waylaid by the historical process of which he is a part and forced to declare himself. In the past years, Berger's book became one of my life rafts. For long stretches, I followed him out of my 5K radius in Melbourne, and into the forest of Dean, whereas 1966 and all was not necessarily well. COVID impacted my reading. I wouldn't characterize it as distraction or even brain fog, but if I felt that an author was not in dialogue with me, I became less reflexively generous with my time and less guilty about all that. I became more intentional in my attention, more aware of the finite minutes of my life. I read Philip Roth's Nemesis about the polio outbreak in New Jersey in the 40s and James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time about the personal pathologies which radiate outward, warping the society that warps us in turn. And suddenly everything old was new again. I opened Junichiro Tanizaki's Makioka Sisters like it was a door and stepped into 1930s Osaka in the dwindling days of a world about to be changed forever. For hope, I turned to Octavia Butler's intricately interwoven futures, reminding me that our capacity for adaptation is humanity's highest holiness. I returned to the intricately interwoven worlds of Elizabeth Strout's Small Town Maine and Manhattan, tears sliding onto my pillow. A tulip stem inside me snapped, her Lucy Barton explained with quiet forthrightness. This is what I felt. It has stayed snapped. It never grew back. I began to write more truthfully after that. Like reading, a writing practice is a paradoxical thing. It constantly demands alternating periods of outward engagement and great inwardness. What I'm trying to tell you is that certain kinds of writers have a learned sense of themselves as outsiders. What I'm trying to tell you is that many of us have been wounded into this work. We were always already in our heads and in our hearts, away for a while, observing, feeling, ordering, writing towards that place where we belong, that place which can never be diminished, that fantastical nation of literature. Sometimes an old photograph, an old friend, an old letter will remind you that you are not who you once were, Rebecca Solnit wrote in A Field Guide to Getting Lost. For that person who dwelt among them, valued this, chose that, wrote thus, no longer exists. Without noticing it, you have traversed a great distance. The strange has become familiar, and the familiar, if not strange, at least awkward or uncomfortable, an outgrown garment. And some people travel far more than others. Some people inherit values and practices as a house they inhabit. Some of us have had to burn down that house. Find our own ground, build from scratch, even as a psychological metamorphosis. The house I live in, where I read the passages that I'm reading to you, was built in the 1880s. The sun slants in under the roof and hits my keyboard in the morning, and when it does this, I think how it has done so every morning for 140 years. Just the same through the First World War and the Second World War, on the exact day that my Romanian great-grandfather was trading his boots for the privilege of hiding his children from Nazis in a barn as it snowed. Through every single car accident that has ever happened, including the one that killed my other great-grandfather when he was too young. Before women could vote, before Mabo versus Queensland had to be argued, the stolen generation, the marriage equality debate, before the politicization as it was happening of evidence-based emergency public health responses to a novel global pandemic responsible for mass death in comparable countries. All the brutal ways we have tried to rationalize away each other's common humanity. And there's that light streaming in just the same. Lockdown began earlier for my husband and I at the start of March 2020, when our obstetrician told us not to enter any shops because there was no longitudinal data about COVID and pregnancy or newborns. As 2020 progressed and all through 2021, I was in a bubble, in a bubble, in a bubble. A writer in lockdown with a newborn, a six-year-old during his first year of school from the kitchen table, the final draft of a book I had spent 4 years on, and a back that regularly refused to let me walk. Outside, there was that quiet, which was both the absence of normality and the presence of the world that had been there all along, like a secret passage in a house one thought one knew. I've spent the last few months writing about alienation and extremism. For that piece, I interviewed a professor who specializes in community resilience. We spoke about radicalization. She said that one of the things that had surprised her during the pandemic was the extent to which some of the anti-vaccination and anti-lockdown protests were animated by resistance to change, resistance to adaptation. People did not want to adapt, she said. They just wanted it to go away and to go back to the way it was. The engineering concept of resilience is steady state, she said. They wanted engineering resilience. They didn't want adaptive, dynamic resilience, which is what we needed. If you can't adapt to change, it breaks you. By our 262nd day of lockdown, I had seen the following things in the small backyard, our small back garden and our enormous sky garden. Lizards, possums, fruit bats, cockatoos, rosellas, rainbow lorikeets, carawangs, hawks, mudlarks, magpies, butterflies, dragonflies, a praying mantis, and its shadow. I saw the newborn on his blanket become the toddler, running, then walking. On our tentative walks, trees took on the familiarity of faces. We ate the fruit that we watched grow and ripen. The world was flat, 5 kilometers in each direction, except on our bookshelves and upward, where it was infinite. There I would rest my eyes on whatever the sky gave me, the stars, the clouds, the tops of the trees, the angle of wing in air, as I slowly metabolized new knowledge about old ways of being which could go no further. Perhaps you discovered it too, in your own great vulnerability, some new and clarifying grief about the ways in which woundings, dysfunction, or dysregulation had passed for normal routines, normal relationships, normal expectations, constricting our lives while being dismissed as simply the way things are. It was, after all, a time of great noticing. Those birds, the swoop of the wind before the rain, a new leak, an old broken floorboard, the hole in the gutter that could no longer be ignored. And with each repair, our homes became something new altogether. One night in the sky garden, I saw a multicolored ring around the glowing white cataract of the full moon, a circular moon bow, the technicolored refraction of light in water drops. And then, at the end of 2021, Christmas Eve, my husband and I happened to see Comet Leonard pass overhead, brighter than anything we had seen apart from the sun and the moon. It was so fast and large and bright, so new, that I lost the ability to speak as it passed, and even now I need to learn new words in order to describe its heat and light.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion and would like to support Melbourne Writers Festival, visit mwf.com.au/support.